what happens when I use my appetite, when I act incorrectly. We've seen that on one level it blinds the intellect, on the second level it weakens the will. But the unfortunate thing is it leaves something in the memory which will keep coming back into the intellect. So the terrible thing is what this does now is, we're not even talking about the connections yet, it provides a means for the slideshow to keep coming back. Isn't that what happens? You keep thinking of things. And the best example of this that I can think of, but I hasten to add, I have so far avoided it, but that's only by the grace of God, is the contemporary thing of pornography on the internet. And my advice to any young person in particular is, at any cost, avoid it. Because all of us by this age have seen things we shouldn't see. No teenager gets a life without seeing things that they shouldn't see. But generally, you did that behind it, you know, no one looking. But now it's available everywhere. Now, what's the problem with it? Without even looking at the interconnections that it has, it imprints itself upon the memory. And you don't have to look at the internet anymore. It can come back at your own choice. But the problem is, when it comes back, intellect is weakened, will is weakened, you'll go back to it again. Do you see how it happens? With these things where there's an imprint, there cannot be a one-off. Because now, in fact, what has happened is the internet's already in your head. And now the soul, this is what he means by defiled. Internally now it's corrupted. Your soul's corrupted from the inside. And that means that it's harder for the intellect to do what it's meant to do, as he said it is, and for the will. And it's that you keep going back. And you'll be surprised at the number of confessions that I hear. I won't name the kinds of people, but across the board. And it becomes a habit. And why is it destructive? Because it objectifies things. People aren't people anymore. In fact, what it does is it not only defiles, but it somehow then reduces the person, him or herself, to something less than what God means them to be. Don't read defile as dirtying. That's kind of, in its own way, colourful language. We don't need to use that. Just say that that's what happens. And the problem is, once an image is tattooed onto the memory, you try to get rid of it. Now, there are different kinds of images which can be imprinted upon the memory. Okay? Father, one of our priests said to me, my God, because he'd never met a Chinese before, he said, if you ever transfer from food to pornography, you'll go to hell. He's talking about Chinese. Okay. But there's that sense in which that's what happens, isn't it? And these things, now, let's see why. Because imprints on the memory do not exist simply as images, because the memory is a place where everything is gathered together. Your memories carry with it feelings and emotions. Okay? And let's go to pornography again. Pornography immediately taps into something which God gave us to ensure that human life would continue. Lust, to use the negative word. But it's that instinct which was given us to ensure procreation, to ensure ongoing life, and it was linked with pleasure. That was God's will. Nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong that this area should carry with it its own requisite type of pleasure. Because all virtue should carry with it some requisite kind of complacency, Thomas would use, some the word pleasure is not the correct word, but there's a certain rightness to the correct, to the use of every appetite correctly used as a certain rightness. There is a correct emotive feeling which attaches to it. So there's every reason why when you do something right, there should be a sense that, you know, that was a good thing to do. Okay? When you do something bad, there should be a sense that was a wrong thing to do. Okay? That there is that emotive connection to freely chosen human acts. Some of them tap into very powerful human feelings. And because there are two very, the very powerful human urges are those which are connected to life itself. And so therefore, fear of death, fear of suffering, pain, that kind of thing, they're very powerful things. Procreation, very powerful. And they connect in the rightness of it, a certain pleasure, a certain, so many other things. So it's not surprising then that these kind of memories can carry with them these very strong emotive connections. And when that happens, you've got a tattoo, and a big one too. But you can't just get some soap and water and rub away. It won't go away. Now, we could pick other things as well. Pride, for example, is another thing. We all like to look good, to appear good, and those kind of things. And that, again, has its own kind of imprint. And those kind of things will carry with it a certain kind of experience as well, because the different appetites will carry with them a certain quality of experience. And according to your weakness, that experience will be more powerful in you than it will be in other people, whatever it is. And that's how that works. That's what John means by the appetite, when disordered, will defile. Can you, or is it this, do you know what I'm talking about? Or am I the only sinner in the room? No, it's when I act from the disordered appetite, it's a sin. Yes. Yes. Because you can choose not to. Okay. But once you choose to and allow the disordered appetite its own life, I picked these three because they work well together. John looks at other ones as well, but it's what happens, isn't it? And then see what happens. They all start working within each other. And after a while, that becomes life. And how do you get out of it? That doesn't get you out of it at all, because you'll come back next week with the same thing. Forgiveness of sins doesn't change you. You still like and dislike the same things, don't you? If you come and say, you know, I gossiped and said nasty things about someone, I'm sure you'll come back in 1 month and say the same thing. No, John of the Cross says, and people do penances after penances after penances to address these things, and it doesn't seem to help very much either. Okay, well, the first thing is, I want you to have a sense of how it works. Okay? Can you see that? And also then to the first thing to begin to recognize is what's happening within yourself and how your actions and your choices impact upon the person that you are. I'm not the horrible person that I am by accident. It's because of the way I've lived and the choices I've, you know, what we've done. Okay? I think that the first thing that we need to do, and now I'm moving a bit away from John, but the first thing is we need to take responsibility for ourselves and be honest about it. Because what we have to have, again, is, and the first one that you can work on, and the easiest one to work on, is the intellect. You know, the intellect will begin to say, oh, I don't want to think about this. Well, then you better think about it. and it's the easiest one. You know, people go to these great Christian rallies and they start crying because they realize I'm a sinner. But life goes on. But if after they realized they were a sinner, they started to try really to be serious about the truth which they've understood and struggled to allow themselves to go that way, then there might be a change. And we'll come to the fact why I began with intellect shortly. The next one you should deal with is the will. The last is the memory, simply because of its very nature. Without going into great detail, because this is not a weekend about memory, the only way to deal with memory as it exists, and we all have memories, is by allowing other things to be imprinted into our memory. Because you can't deprint what's there. You can't forget until you've got dementia. Okay, and I hope and pray you won't have dementia. You know, you kind of dementia should not be seen as salvation. Because it'd be a terrible kind of thing. I'm holding up for dementia. It's going to be my only salvation. You know, that's not what it's about. But the way, just to give you some simple thoughts at the moment, the way to deal with memory will obviously be, because I can't forget, will be to put other things in. Okay, I'm just giving you simply the way John of the Cross thinks. And in fact, it does work, I think, that way. And with the will, yeah, to knuckle down and make yourself. And when you can't make yourself, that's when a penance can help. Penance for the sake of it, penance is useless. But sometimes a penance can give me the added balance to do something. Because I've got something else to get my teeth into. It's kind of like a walking stick. Okay? But penance is never more than a walking stick. Because to do penance for the sake of it, at the best will lead to pride, actually. Because penance becomes an end in itself, and God didn't make us for penance. God made us to live in His presence. God made us for happiness. God made us for fullness. God didn't make us for penance. But sometimes it's like a walking stick, something to lean on. Is something there which can give me an added, but if it's not there for a purpose, it's doing nothing. It's a penance for no purpose can be a very dangerous thing in its own way. Because I meet people who will come to confession and say, I didn't do my penance on Wednesday. That's not a sin. So why is this person confessing it? You look behind it, something funny is happening. It more should be, you're confessing something that you're doing the penance for. That I can understand. But I haven't been doing any penance. Better that you said, I've been overly good to myself. I've been luxurious. But when someone says, I didn't do the penance, something's out of kilter, isn't it? You do a penance because of weakness and fault. Confess your weakness, please, not the fact that you didn't do penance. So penance does come in, but it has its proper place. And I don't know that's just to answer something for you, Ryan, but we could say more, but that'll take me off the track. Okay, so that's something of the inside of John's, a practical application of John's understanding of the human person and beginning to understand the psychology of sin, if you want to say. Okay. Now, the important thing that I want to say now is something which is very, very difficult, but it needs to be said. And John is very hard when he says this. John says, any appetite disordered, whether it is grave in the sense of sin, about mortal sin, or even trifling, is serious. Because we need to get in mind what all of this is about. Why is this important to John? Very important to get this. Not because it means I'm not going to be a good person. Because if my goal in life is to be a good person, it has nothing to do with God. We might look at that tomorrow, in the difference between depression and a dark night. John's focus is, I want God for God's sake. I want to be united with God. And one of the things which happens is, we can strive to be virtuous and good because we want to be virtuous and good. That's a good thing in a way. I mean, if that's the way we're going to get good, virtuous people, well then okay. But John, remember, John's perspective, his understanding of a human person is something which is open to God. And that in itself also is disordered. Because I want these things so that I will be good. And it's only about me. It's very selfish. It's why John is so unrelenting and so scary. But we need to get a sense of where it's going, what he's offering us. Because for John, what all of this is about is that my will and God's will can be united, can be one. It's all about loving with the love of God and being one in love with God. That's the reason that I want to address my disordered appetites. So far, no one has asked me the question, which is the obvious question, but why does that matter? You're just presuming in yourself, yes, it does matter. I don't want to be a bad person. I want to be a good person. And some of you will be saying, because if I'm a bad person, I'll go to hell. I want to be a good person, so I'll go to heaven. These are very good reasons, because they're all about me. Well, yeah, maybe there's something in that, because it's the initial step. But in the end, the answer to the why question is, what is it that's meant to be? Where are we going? What's the focus? What's the aim? I started raising that question for you last night. What is the aim of human life? Thomas Aquinas speaks of it as beatitude. The Greeks in their philosophy spoke of it as happiness, because they didn't have a sense of the next step. Life is not about happiness, but life for John of the Cross is about the possibility of blessedness, which is different to happiness. And blessedness is union with God. That might say, well, what do you mean by union with God? Again, let's go through the 16th century way and look within yourself. There is something in all of us which longs for intimacy. We have all got different capacities for intimacy. To simply speak about intimacy generically is quite stupid, because no two people have the same capacity. And when I speak about it, I know that what I mean by what I want by way of intimacy will be different to what you mean and want. And yet there'll be great similarities. But every human being knows in their own experience of themselves that alone they are incomplete. That's why there's this constant searching and drive and, you know, that freneticness of trying to fill emptiness. Every person, John would say, knows in their own experience that they are incomplete and they long for something. No, not something, but someone. Not simply someone, but someone who alone can fully and absolutely complete and fulfill them. That's, of course, God. And whether you're married or single, you will not be completely satisfied in this life, because it's part of that human dynamic and drive. It's a wonderful thing, because it enables humans to do extraordinary things. That fundamentally is the great motivation and drive which pushes humans some human beings to extraordinary greatness in the most powerful sense of the word. Now that is in all of us. And it longs for something. That's what John means by union in terms of the experience. And it's union not of thinking. No. You don't long to have a common thought with someone. Not of memory. But union of the present moment, of choice, of will, of love. A union which is indeed a union, but which allows for the individuality of each person to remain. You don't long for such intimacy that you won't exist anymore, but we all long for that intimacy which is so complete and yet individuality remains. John says that's blessedness. That's what life's about. And only from the theological aspect, only from a God-centered understanding and a God-centered anthropology can you come to this. If you don't have God, you can't be saying what John's saying. This is what I began with, that definition, openness to God. That's what it means for John. Okay? Now he says, every appetite is given to me so as to make this possible. Every appetite, every power, every desire is there if it is working properly. It's not that it takes me away from someone. If I was married through an authentic love of my wife, which for all of you who are husbands is still quite selfish, I'm sure. So it's got a long way to go forward. But if it is exactly what it should be ordered, it will also be about love of God. Because for the husband, an authentic, proper, integrated love of wife will bring about closeness to God. As will every appetite if it is ordered and operating correctly. So disordered means, now to throw light on what we said this morning, because I couldn't say this yet because we hadn't got to this part. The problem is there's so many strands. Disordered means not simply that this appetite makes me get things wrong, but in fact the appetite, rather than bringing me to God, is taking me away from God. And the purpose of the appetite is to take me to God. So now I can give you the hard statement again of John. Any appetite, regardless of what it is, even if in its misuse it only leads to venial sin, in itself will prevent union with God. Do you see what he's saying? Because it's there, and it might be in an area which is not particularly important, where my weakness is, but it's sufficient to ensure that what should be won't happen. Now, the problem where the disorder is in something venial, in fact, to my mind, is more serious in its own way than when it's in something mortal. Because when my disorder is in something serious, I know. When it's in something which is not particularly serious, I might know, but I think it doesn't matter. And John says the image he gives is like a little bird trying to fly to heaven. And whether it's a chain of iron stopping the bird from flying or a little thread of silk, it makes no difference because the bird won't be able to get away. Appetites and the ordering of them. Okay, I've been talking 25 minutes. Let's see if you've got any questions first. You have to be very careful. Basically, you need to identify by looking at that where your disorders are. And if one of the disorders is, I'm drinking too much, perhaps the only way is to stop drinking until you're going to find a way to order your drinking. If you can't get your drinking into some kind of sensible level, then really there's only one other alternative to stop, isn't there? It might sound harsh, but in a practical sense, that's what it is. John doesn't say you can't drink alcohol, but if drinking alcohol has this impact upon you, then get it right. And if you can't get it right, then stop. And that's straight from the gospel. Better enter into heaven with one arm missing or one eye missing than go to hell with two eyes. It sounds pretty harsh, but really when you think about it, it's true, isn't it? If the only way that I can correct this part of my life is by denying it completely, well then, at least for the moment, I'd better do that. Because in some things for us, because of the way that we've been defiled and weakened and blinded, to have one means I have 100. I just don't have the strength to do anything. And the only way to build it up, in fact, is to stop. Full stop. And I don't think there's any other answer, really. Certainly, for those people who come to me with confessions about pornography, my answer is just stop. There's no other way. There's no way out of that. Because of the way it works. You know, so there are different things. I was going to go on and talk about what to do about these things, which means that tomorrow I'll either do that or look at depression and the dark night. What would you prefer? Some want me to go on, others want depression. I've only got one talk. Let me think about it and pray about it. But it might mean that you might have to come back again. Any thoughts or questions? Yes.
But is there a role that the spirit can
play? I'm going to give you that now because I must give you this even if I don't go any further. Intellect which is blinded is perfected by faith. And faith for John brings darkness to the mind. Isn't it? How do I attend to the blindness? By bringing darkness. Faith does that. And I don't have time to go into this. If you want to, we can do this tomorrow, or depression, one or the other. Intellect. Let's look at will next. Will is about love. Because love will then direct the will. That's not exactly his words, but that's what he means. Love will direct the will. The example that I gave to you is you're too weak to say no, but something more powerful enters in your life and you're able to say no. Memory. It's about the virtue of hope. And it's about every memory. Let's put it this way. That every memory becomes about Christ. So it's not about forgetting things, but it can be, for example, you may have a memory of something terrible that's happened to you, and it's a very afflictive memory. But when you can begin to see that in spite of that, God was there with you, helping you, supporting you, that memory doesn't change, still the same memory, but it becomes a memory about Christ. And that's part of the cleansing of the memory, is in a way a different understanding, a different experience can attach to the same memory, or things go in which can so craft and reformulate something. So it's not about forgetting something. So we all have tragedies. For some people, tragedies become their strength. For others, tragedy becomes what holds them down. Because those for whom tragedy is a strength, somehow they eventually see, but God's there. And that memory now becomes a more powerful statement of God than any other memory. Same thing, but the memory through the virtue of hope now becomes about Christ. John uses the language, it takes on the form of Christ. But I'm not going to use John's language, taking on the form of Christ, because that's too technical. You don't know what that means. But the memory becomes about Christ. Okay? Now that's where John, in fact, now is more powerful. The bulk of John's writing is about this. This part that I've given you here is only the first book of the Ascent of Mount Carmel. Ascent Book 1. There are three books of the Ascent of Mount Carmel and two books of the Dark Night. In his treatise on the spiritual life, five books. And what I've given you up to this evening fundamentally has been from the first book. The rest of this is the second book of the Ascent, third book of the Ascent, for example. And when he talks about, third book of the Ascent is memory, when he talks about love, we're really looking at the whole of the spiritual canticle and the living flame of love. So that's the bulk, but all I've given you is the initial part. What first one?
The intellect and faith and darkness.
I can't explain that now. If you want, I can do it tomorrow. But there's a big argument as to what I should do tomorrow. But faith in itself, the gift of faith, brings darkness to the mind. What that means, John means by that, is faith in itself, when it enters into the intellect, what it does is it stops the mind from doing the wrong things, is another way of putting it. He means by bring dark. We are not determined simply by our thoughts, but it enables us to be determined by God simply. But that's a long way. I've never met anyone who's at that level, not even myself. Oh yes. I mean, to go through all of this, there's suffering. But good suffering. There's suffering for a purpose, and there's suffering which is pointless. When someone comes along to you and keeps punching you, there's no point in that. It's one kind of suffering. Whereas on the other hand, parents suffer deprivation so their children can have things. It's a suffering. It's a different kind of suffering. There's a point in it. Talk about what?
The intellect and faith, darkness. He talks
that's
the
second book of the Ascent.
God is foolishness to yes. men, and how we eventually union with God.
What he's trying to do there is to point out somehow the futility of the appetites. The way he talks about faith and intellect is in the second book of the Ascent, in particular, chapter 7, I think it is, where he says faith is the only proximate and proportionate means to union with God. I haven't read it for years. I think it's 7 or 8. It's 6. He says, faith causes darkness, in the hope begets emptiness, and charity produces nakedness. But the part that I'm looking for is... Or is it 7? Right. No, it's 9. There we go. He says, faith alone, which is the only proximate and proportionate means to union with God, for the likeness between faith and God is so close that no other difference exists than that between believing in God and seeing Him. I think it's a long, long, long time ago. Peter might remember. I think I gave a weekend retreat on that passage. It's very powerful. Sister Vendelgard might remember it too.
Why would you say if you said that memory was the hardest thing, and if we want to achieve things, we have to go in the order of intellect, we have to think, okay, maybe what's wrong there, and then...
Because memory is the last one where you will notice change.
Despite the hardness of
yes, faith is much easier. It's kind of, I mean, they all kind of happen in their way together. But the last place to be cleansed will be the memory. That's where, be careful what you put in. It's about loving with detachment. That makes sense? Yes, kind of. Let's put it another way. We love selfishly as opposed to loving selflessly. But that's another whole weekend at least. But I only use that word because I knew the sister, that it would ring a bell for Sister Murray Beres if I use the word attachment as opposed to detachment. Okay. Well, that's an hour and 5 minutes, and we didn't do everything I wanted to do, but anyway, that's gives you something to look forward to, because if you don't get everything that you want, if you did get everything you want, there's no point going to heaven, is there? Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.